It's amplifier time!
Woo! That's not the intro we're supposed to. What?
Welcome back to the Pod of Greed.
Welcome back, guys. So this is the first week of the year that we're going to be on time. This is going to go out on a Thursday. Isn't that? We should be applauded for that.
No, no. Let's not applaud. Let's not get our applause yet. We'll get our applause when this is the 52nd consecutive episode.
Okay. Well, welcome back indeed. Hope you're all having a wonderful Thursday. We picked a great day to do this podcast because there's a new Yu-Gi-Oh! Ban list. So we have an easy story to talk about. And it is a big ban list. So we're going to dive into that and then dive into a few news stories from the week. There's not a lot, I feel, that happened. So we might have to just sort of
We might yap a little
bit. Yap and wing it some. We'll see. But before we get into all of that, if you're watching the premiere,
put your ones
a
up.
One in chat would certainly be appreciated. If you're not, then premier you can still
game. Rise up.
Thumbs up the video. Still leave a comment. Let us know what you think about all these stories because there's going to be a few. Okay. So we did get a new ban list. Literally, on the day that we're recording this, this just came out a few hours ago. So it's a new TCG one. It's going to be going into effect on February 2nd, and there are a lot of changes on this one. Have you taken a look at it already?
Yes, I did look at the list, though I will admit a lot of it went right over my head.
What do you mean?
Well, sadly, I have not been very involved in the latest metagame of Yu-Gi-Oh! So
yeah, not very
I'm going
in.
To need some help in understanding the full impact of the ban list.
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting one. I finally, for the first time, I think I can say I can sort of speak from a place of relative experience. I mean,
Paul's an expert.
Yeah. I was playing a lot of physical Yu-Gi-Oh! In the latter part of last year. I was going to regionals and stuff. I even went to a couple YCSs, although they weren't doing this format. So, the field was interesting. Mitsurugi and Yummy were kind of the dominant decks. Draco Tail as well. K9 were pushing out a lot of crazy things. And so this ban list basically seeks to sort of tame all of those decks, along with a few other little strategies. We'll just hop right into it. So, there are four forbidden cards. Barrier Statue of the Torrent, Malice Q Whitebinder, Herald of the Arclight, and Harpy's Featherstorm. So just to take these one by one, Barrier Statue of the Torrent.
Okay, that's obvious. Even I know that every Barrier Statue deserves to be banned.
Yeah, they're slowly making their way onto these ban lists. They'd gotten fire, earth, and wind, and now water joins them. This was actually the one that's probably used the least because not that many people actually play the mermail water pile thing, but it still is a thing and it can still lock you out.
All barrier statues deserve to burn.
Yeah. So I think light and dark will eventually join them at some point or another. Just give it time. Malice Q Whitebinder is a big one too. Malice is a deck that the TCG has really had to constantly hammer at over the last few ban lists, and it just doesn't go away. It is very resilient. Whitebinder, in particular, kind of can act as an extender. It can act as a recovery card. It accumulates the most resources out of all of the Malice Link monsters. And it being banned, I think, might actually be the nail in the coffin for this deck. Because for so much of what they've done to Malice up to now, it has been consistency hits. Just Malice and Underground and Dormouse and all these cards going to one. They banned Link Decoder. They banned Splash Mage. They have really tried to get this deck in check, and they just haven't been able to. So finally, they pulled the trigger on Whitebinder, and
they pulled the plug on it.
Yeah. Herald of the Arclight is probably the biggest talk of this list.
I'm sorry, Paul.
I am too. I really like this
card.
I'm not
sorry.
So this card searched for ritual monsters when it was sent to the graveyard. A normally innocuous effect that would never really been a problem up until the release of Habakiri and the Mitsurugi archetype. And so this was also a really powerful. This card was interesting because Yummy could use this for two different reasons. They could use it as a boss kind of inboard piece because
it's a negate.
It's a negate. It's technically even a mini floodgate while it's in the field. But also, they could send it to the grave and search for Mitsurugi pieces, specifically Habakiri, and then do that side of the deck. Because, like, as you know, strong engines in this game don't have restrictions. So you can do your whole yummy thing, and you can do your whole malice thing, or not malice thing, but your Mitsurugi thing, and it's a whole thing. So it's banned now. This is a bit of a shame, I think, mostly because, like, there are a lot of, like, honest ritual decks that made use of this card. Like, I play Voiceless Voice. I like
having nothing Herald. Honest about it.
I play Dogmatica.
Nothing honest about it.
Okay.
You milled out all 15 cards of my extra deck.
Right. That's true. Yeah. So Herald's gone. And that's a big deal because that means no deck can use Herald as a way to bridge to Mitsurugi. So
unless you play Genesis format.
Yeah, although I think actually even then you can't. Because like Habakiri is 100 points in Genesis
format. Oh, yeah, I guess not. No,
so, I don't know. But Harpy's Featherstorm is the last one. And it's a trap that people have hated for a long time now.
I was the first person to hate that trap.
Were you?
Yes. Okay. This was way back in like 2011 or 2012.
Whenever it came out.
Whatever, the very first opportunity it was out, Alex used it and made me hate it. Then I told Paul the card was bullshit, and Paul said, that card's not that bad, the deck is bad.
Well, up to then, that was true. Like, it's a card that is meant to be used for Harpies, and it is used by anything but. But the main problem now is that decks could also access it with, like, Triple Tactics Thrust, and... You know,
and if you don't know what it does, which you should know by now, is it says you can't activate any cards.
Yeah. Well, you can't. All your monster effects are negated that turn.
Yeah. You can activate cards. You just can't activate your monster effects, which is about basically saying.
Or you can activate them. They'll all be negated.
It's an important distinction. You can activate them, which means you can pay a cost.
Yeah. It's obscenely strong. And being searchable and stuff. Like, a lot of decks could make that one little rank one wing beast so that any deck could use this. It was very annoying. That got hit on me a lot, like, at some regionals and stuff, so. Okay, those are the banned cards. Next, let's go to the limited ones.
The very chunky limited
list. Draco Tail lost two cards. Yeah. Draco Tail Mululu went to one, and Ketu Draco Tail went to one.
And honestly, that's all you really need to do to Draco Tail. You don't have to ban their cards. You just got to limit them.
Yeah, Draco Tail is an interesting deck because it is currently, some would argue, maybe the best deck of the format before this list came out. Will certainly be one of the best decks come Burst Protocol as they get more branded support that they can use and a new fusion. But Ketu Draco Tail was a really strong consistency card for them. Mm-hmm. And it was also great for... going second, if your opponent had a monster in the field, then Ketu Draco Tail would let you not only search, but then also fuse. Draco Tail Mululu going to one is kind of a similar thing. Mululu is like...
our poor negate.
Yeah, it's a summonable fusion guy. So by cutting the consistency of this deck, I do think that this does a lot of harm to Draco Tail because they need their monster numbers, you know, in order to get the cycle flowing, I think, with the fusion.
Yeah, you want to have as many copies of them as you can, just because it's a deck that wants to kind of go through every copy of those cards.
Yeah, you need to be fusing. If you're not fusing, you're really not playing. And, so Mululu and Ketu Draco Tail, I think some people wanted them to hit Rahu Draco Tail instead, because it's the one that, like, fuses from deck.
Wait, no.
No, this is the search.
Oh, yeah, Ketu's a search. Rahu is the one
from deck. Rahu's, like, fuses from deck, yeah.
No, I think Ketu's the better hit. A fuse from deck is really good, but this isn't truly branded fusion.
Yeah, that is true. I think Rahu Draco Tail is a little bit more fair because you do have to still send something from your hand. You'll only be able to, like, send, like, one thing from your deck. So it's not as bad. Anyway, K9 also lost a few cards. K9-66A Jokul. He's the guy that can summon any level 5 from your hand alongside itself, and he searches. And then also they lost a case for K9, which is the continuous spell that searches for a K9 on activation. So similar to, like, Ketu Draco Tail and stuff, this is a consistency hit first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
A pretty good one, I would say. I was hoping that they would also maybe hit Spell Canceler, just because it's a level 5 monster that would sometimes sneak up in a lot of K9 builds, and Jokul could pretty easily summon it. There are other ways to summon it too, but that was one of the ways you could do it. And so I thought like maybe hitting one more floodgate wouldn't hurt anybody, but still, these are pretty impactful hits for like the K9 engine. So, yeah, nice. Any thoughts on that? I don't know. You haven't really engaged with K9.
I haven't. I really haven't engaged with ever since your Vanquish Soul deck went away. That was as close as I ever got to Vanquish Soul. I mean, to K9, and you didn't play them, so I didn't.
Yeah, I wasn't even playing it. So, well, anyway, Vanquish Soul Holly Sue. Speaking of them, she also got limited. So in exchange for her getting limited, Stake Your Soul and Rosin went back to 3. Now, as a Vanquish Soul purist, this is a change I can totally appreciate. I hated when they put Stake and Rosin to 1. I felt that you only had
Soul Power Vanquish Soul for like a few short weeks. Time.
So now we're getting a bit of a trade where we get those cards back in exchange for losing Holly Sue. So it's a net gain of Vanquish Soul cards. But it is, Holly Sue is like kind of the card that was allowing them to keep up, I think, with the game today. Because she's like a turn zero sort of thing. She can summon herself. I still don't mind this hit, though. I think it's fair and reasonable. So, yeah. Yummy Snatchy went to 1. This is a big deal because the Yummy deck really needs its Snatchies, like with an S.
I'm trying to remember which one Snatchy is.
It's kind of the everything card. It's their Link 1 monster. Oh, that okay. Any of their yummies can just make it. When you make it, you get a field spell from your deck. And more importantly, it can quick effect synchro. And any time that you like make your yummy synchro monsters, they can treat like a Link 1 monster as a tuner for them. So,
which I've always...
It'll cheat.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm not going to get into a rant about how Konami breaks their own rules.
No, go ahead. Get into a rant. That's what we're here for.
I get so annoyed when Konami will make archetypes based around like a particular summoning method, and then the whole point of the archetype is to break the rules on how you're actually supposed to do the summon. Like,
yeah.
Synchros need tuners. That's what they told us. That was the promise they made us way back when Yusei first summoned Junk Warrior.
Right.
And then the Yummy, I mean, we fast forward to, what was it, 2025? When Yummy came out?
Yeah.
Yeah, we fast forward to 2025, and they're like, oh, no, Link 1's, at least for this archetype, can be tuners.
Yeah. There's a lot of cases of that, too. Like, why, more and more these days.
Why did we just arbitrarily break that rule? Why make them a synchro archetype? Why not make them a Link archetype? You want to play with Link so bad.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, there's a bit of a tug of war there where, like, it makes Yummy unique, but you are breaking the foundational rules of a summoning type so like, in order to do it. So, like, some players don't mind that. They think it's cool that maybe what makes Yu-Gi-Oh! Cool is that like these decks can do all these weird things. I'm kind of more with you. I don't like when decks just cheat because I think it's like, well, why do we even have the rules in the first place? Anyway, Yummy Snatchy at 1 is a pretty big deal for hitting the Yummy deck because they typically would run through multiple Snatchies in even just a given combo. Snatchy does not have like a hard once on its effect, so you can... Multiple Snatchies can, like, use their effects in one turn and blah, 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 blah. I will say, I mean, it seems harsh. Master Duel chose to put this card to 2 when it released. But at 1, it means that, like, if this thing gets hit with, like, Called by the Grave, Ghost Ogre even bye, on its bye. Own effect, it's really tough for Yummy to, like, actually even get it back in circulation sometimes. So, yeah, a good hit. And then Habakiri, no Mitsurugi. He's kind of been, I think, the talk of the town, I'd say, in this last...
I feel like I haven't heard any one card mentioned more than Habakiri
right.
in this card game.
Yeah, it was the star of last year, and it's for good reason. I mean, like, it's generic, it's low commitment, high value card. I was wondering how they would hit Mitsurugi on this list, because... They have confirmed that Mitsurugi are going to be in Legendary Modern decks, which is coming out like here in a couple months. And that's that product that's got like a Sky Striker, X-Saber, and Mitsurugi deck inside. And so I knew that they couldn't ban any Mitsurugi cards if they were about to, you know, have like a
I mean, they could. It would just be a strange play.
Yeah, it'd be really weird. So they decided to limit Mitsurugi. And in addition to banning Herald, it means that you certainly won't really be seeing any like yummy Mitsurugi decks or very many Mitsurugi hybrids. But a deck could still do it, I guess, if they wanted to. So
I mean, I guess for the most part, if you want to play Mitsurugi Pure, is still a playable deck, which is the whole point, right? Right.
Pure Mitsurugi is still playable, and I think that that's good. I'm always a fan of keep the like pure decks where possible. Try to keep them playable, even if one of their tools is being abused by other decks. I still don't like decks having to like lose everything or lose like so much of the crux. But there are exceptions. But yeah, I think that this card at one, I'm interested in seeing how much this gets played, like if people still choose to use this. Because in addition to being at one and Herald being banned, they've already banned King of the Feral Imps. So like that was kind of the rank four way of searching Habakiri.
And it shouldn't even work that way. You know why, Paul?
Why is that?
Because what about this picture as a reptile?
I mean, it looks very serpentine.
That's a dragon.
It looks serpentine.
That's a dragon.
Okay. Well.
Like, this, they arbitrarily made this dragon into a reptile.
You say that. Wait till you see the actual, like, little small main deck Mitsurugi monsters or whatever. They are very not reptile. They're sort of reptile looking.
Some of the little ones are. But I realized.
But they're people. I mean, they're people.
I hadn't taken such a good look at Habakiri before. And I was like, this is not. This is just a dragon.
I think Habakiri uses the same art template as Cyber Dragon Infinity, I believe.
Really? Oh, I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, if you look up Cyber Dragon Infinity, I think that they are. It's because, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh's got that thing where, like, certain cards will just have, like, literally, like, identical poses and framing.
Right.
Like, we've seen that with, like, some really weird examples. Blade Knight and, like, Utopia.
Oh, ooh, yeah, Rongo I Minion see it. And
Mermail Abyss, Teus.
So Habakiri has a lower profile on the card.
Yeah, he's ducked a little lower.
But yeah, I mean,
but he and Cyber Dragon
like
Infinity,
head down, back above head, wings up to the left and right, like
same spiral pattern.
That
I
see it. I see it.
Yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh does that. Anyways, yeah, I'm glad to see Habakiri to one. I do not like this card very much. I don't love low commitment.
It sounds like no one likes this card.
Well, people. I'll give Habakiri this, or I'll give Mitsurugi this. It is a really well-designed deck on its own. I think that, like, as a standalone deck, Pure Mitsurugi is strong, but reasonable to fight against. It's okay. Strong, don't get me wrong, but, like, it's when you have to deal with Yummy plus Mitsurugi, or Rhyzeal plus Mitsurugi, or Orcist plus Mitsurugi. Like, decks that are already very powerful in their own right, then getting to just add a second entire layer of powerful stuff with no restriction, I think is where Habakiri starts to really piss me off. So I'm interested to see it at one. Okay, so some cards that went to two. Oh, as in one card that went to two. Droll and Lockbird. This one is...
I think only the meta heads can really talk about this one.
Right, yeah. This is a card that a lot of people have been really getting angrier at in recent months. Some people compare it to Max C. I don't know that I would say it's like quite that egregious, but it is a powerful card. It's kind of a load-bearing card. Every deck, and by every, I mean like, you know, 90% of Yu-Gi-Oh! Decks have to do multiple searches in a turn, sometimes many, many searches. And Droll and Lockbird says that you can't. And so it can effectively end a turn. And for a lot of people, that feels unfair. Like, why is one hand trap capable of telling me I have to just, like, stop playing? And Yu-Gi-Oh! Is all about playing. So, people want this card, like, banned, really. I think putting it to two is it's a small start. It could mean more. It could mean that they'll maybe put it to one next or something.
I feel like if we ban Droll and Lockbird, we'll end up in a situation where we're begging for Droll and Lockbird.
I know what you mean. Like, So I don't have like a strong opinion for or against Droll. Well, I take that back. Like,
when you're building a side deck for an event, would you rather Droll exist or not exist?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Droll is a card that like you are so thankful when you have it, and you're like bitter and angry when it's used against you. And that's fundamentally many cards in Yu-Gi-Oh! My thing with Droll is like if you want to get rid of Droll and like ban it and all that stuff, get it out of the game, I think that you also have to proportionately take out a lot of other, like, the power level of all the other stuff has to also come down. And that's a tough ask in Yu-Gi-Oh! But that's the thing, right? Like, Droll seems annoying when it's locking you out, but when you see what some of these decks, Alec, can do, when they're uninhibited. I mean, you know, you were saying last week that, you know, you want to try to play a little more Master Duel.
Yep.
And you'll quickly learn, like, you know, I think Master Duel makes it worse. It's like best of one, so you really feel the effects of this. But, like, you lose the coin flip. Your opponent goes first. You don't have any hand traps. You're in for a cutscene. And some of these decks will keep summoning and keep summoning and keep summoning. And, like, they will go from engine to engine, card to card. Like, you'll be there for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes. And they will make these obscene boards that just truly wish to deprive you of everything that is good in your life. And and it's like, you know, if you had rolled them, that wouldn't have happened. So you have to kind of, there is a comparison to be made where it's like, should a card like Droll that forbades the opponent from playing get to exist? Or should people get to play, take forever, make a huge board, and then deprive you of the ability to play? And I don't know that there's like a right or wrong answer, but that's why I say if you hit Droll, you need to be hitting everything else. Like, you need to be bringing the ceiling down on what these combo decks can do.
That's a lot of cards to hit.
That's why I think it's got to be more of a card design thing. Like, there's a lot of old cards that need to be, that would probably need to be hit, but I think that, like, moving forward, you have to stop designing cards in such a way that, like, is so, just we move from card to card and search the next thing and search the next thing. Because, like, every new archetype is kind of designed.
They should just
way.
Start designing all the archetypes like at Emancipators. Just excavate the whole deck away.
I mean, maybe. It's actually interesting. God, Emancipator wouldn't mind Droll too much. Yeah, sort of.
They probably wouldn't. I mean, they wouldn't love it, but, you know, they could play under it.
All right, there's a few cards, actually a lot of cards, that got unlimited and went to 3.
This is always the fun part.
Yeah. Nothing is super exciting this time around. Like, you know, sometimes there'll be like some
you
old
take
card.
That back.
There wasn't like a banned card, though.
Dark Greffer.
He's not exciting. Okay. Black and White Dragon, like, they... I know why this is.
We are living in truly blessed times.
This is a Dragon Link thing.
Yes.
Because, like, Burst Protocol has got more rocket cards, and so this is to make you want to play Dragon Link.
Though putting them at 3 feels like a lot. You could have put them
scary.
At 2.
Like, I have a feeling people won't even run 3 of both.
I don't think like so. I think like you might run, like, 2 copies.
Dark Greffer has been...
Let's go!
That card's, like, been limited for so many years of Yu-Gi-Oh's history. It's actually crazy.
Unnecessarily.
Very unnecessarily. Like,
I remember when Dark Greffer was hit.
Yeah. And
it was, like... Because it was back when you using it in Armageddon Night in those old, like, dark decks was a thing. And that was... Was that more than a decade ago?
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, like, some of these cards... It's one of those examples of a card that just, like...
It got forgotten about.
It got forgotten. I think that they forgot it was on the list.
I did forget it was on the list.
I already talked about Rosin and Stake Your Soul. Coming back to 3. Yay, happy me. Zodiac Drident. Honestly, good.
Our girl is back, man.
I'm so surprised. She's been in like 1 or 2 or whatever, and like no one plays her.
No, I mean, I think Zodiac has... The game has finally caught up to Zodiac.
Oh, don't say finally. I mean, it caught out like 5 years ago.
No, but like, it's caught up to Zodiac in that we could have 17 Drydens in that deck and it wouldn't matter.
Right. Oh, yeah, I get what you mean. I mean, the thing is, like, Rhyzeal Detonator is like a better Drydent.
Yeah, like, card design does.
Better, so.
Decks casually do what Zodiac used to, like, strive to do.
Yeah. No, an interesting one, Crystron Inclusion's back. I think that's just because the K9 cards are hit. So, Crystron, K9, and been a popular hybrid, so now that they're hitting the K9 cards, they feel like they can
Here's
bring back
Crystron
the Crystron cards.
Both of you can now play them.
Similar to Vanquish Soul. Yeah, I don't know that people really like Crystron. Like, I know a lot of people played Crystron because it was good. I don't know that many people like Crystron as like a deck.
I don't think so. I don't think many people actually like Crystron. Like, when before Crystron, like K9, I'd forgotten that Crystron even existed. No one had mentioned Crystron. I only remembered they existed because Alex has them in his binder.
Yeah. And then Snatch Steal and Change of Heart both went to 3. Which is so funny to think about, these old banned cards.
Well, remember when Snatch Steal was brought back for like one format?
Yeah, I remember it was brought back for one format.
People melted down behind it.
It got banned again. Now it's like back.
At 3.
It's a 3. Same with Change of Heart. I remember there was like a big headline about Change of Heart coming back. Like Dexerto and other like IGN, like random gaming news outlets were like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Brings back iconic old banned card for the first time in, like, 15 years
or whatever. This is what it takes for us to make headlines.
Yeah. But, like, these two cards going to three, it's so funny how little this means.
Yeah, taking control of one monster on your opponent's board, that's
no
not special.
There's two things. A, there's, like, a chance that these could be used as decent side deck cards. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a world where you could side these for going second and, like, kind of use them to break a board. But more importantly, they are actually really useful in the Hekka Hands deck. And they,
I hated the fact you said that.
And I think they reprinted both of those cards in Phantom Revenge intended to be, like, played with Hekka Hands. Because Hekka Hands want to, like, take your opponent's cards and then use cards that were owned by your opponent in order to get more beneficial effects. So if you are a Hekka Hands fan, you can now run three.
You should
of
play
those.
Vampires instead.
Maybe you could do a Hekka Hands Vampire Hybrid.
No, that's probably a bad idea.
You remember back in like the Yu-Gi-Oh days when like that was like the furthest the idea of a hybrid went. These two things vaguely are related, so like maybe you could do something.
No, now a hybrid is you can bridge.
I can bridge into Mitsurugi.
You can bridge into this Zek's extra deck monsters.
Right, that's right. That's exactly it.
That's how it works.
So that's the ban list. And I have overall thoughts. I mean, I know, like you said, you haven't been like super checked in. So just from like hearing it and sort of, I guess, my brief descriptions, do you feel that like any new insights or?
I mean, you know, one of the first ban lists since we started Genesis format. And it feels like the days of everybody having to live and die by the ban list is just over now.
Oh, in the sense that like there are other ways of playing that would
allow
you to.
Because like at one point in Yu-Gi-Oh, no matter who you were, no matter how much or little you played, the ban list was your lifeblood. Because it directly controlled how you played the game. But now that we have Genesis format, and I know, like, when I look at the ban list, now there's an asterisk next to it. Now when I look at it, I see if I decide to play
if you're
advanced
a physical
format,
TCG player.
Like, if I play advanced format TCG this player. Matters to me. Like, a lot of the, like, the unlimited section, these cards, most of these cards were already at three as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, so I have a few thoughts on that. There's a lot to say, really. So first of all, I agree with you on that. Like, I think that we are now kind of at a post ban list is everything moment in Yu-Gi-Oh. There are other ways you could be playing. Like, if you play Master Duel, this just doesn't matter. Something that I've also noticed is like, I think that as Yu-Gi-Oh's kind of mid-core crowd and casual crowd has deteriorated, and I do still believe that it is kind of deteriorating, I think that you actually get a little bit less interest with each new ban list because, like, the casual player who maybe would have felt affected by this list probably doesn't even play this game anymore. Like, there was a period of time where, like, a ban list felt like it was a holiday. It was a big deal for everyone. Mm. Like, even if you weren't, like, the most competitive type of person, there was still just something exciting about the ban list. Maybe yep. an old deck kind of came back. And like, and this ban list doesn't have any sauce like that. Like, it doesn't have like, I thought maybe they'd like, they brought back Spiral Master Plan or, you know, like something kind of weird.
Oh, are we going to look Dark Greffer in the eyes?
No, but it wasn't, here's the thing, it wasn't banned though.
That's true.
It was like limited. Like there's not like a, or like Electromite, that would have been like a headliner, right?
True.
Like, for Pendulum players, which tends to kind of skew more casual. Like, I think this ban list doesn't have that. And so what I really see here is a list that is so hyper-targeted to just people who are going to regionals and YCS events, which is a specific crowd, a vocal crowd, but a minority in a sense. And they're probably pretty, I don't know if they're like pleased with this list or maybe they have, I'm sure they have like many thoughts on the list. But I think that the days of like the ban list being something that the average Yu-Gi-Oh! Enjoyer cares about might be slipping away some.
Yeah, and
maybe
and
that's the too doomer of me. I don't know.
I mean, it's bad, but there's some good to that as well. I mean, we used to make videos all the time talking about like the ban list frenzy and how people, like, they'd have these high highs and low lows because of the ban list. So to some degree, it takes the edge off of it, right?
That's true. Like, if you are playing casually, then literally none of this shit matters. Like, because when I look at this ban list, I just see these cards that are so... Like, something about seeing K966A Jawcool on here. Like, I don't even, like, I really don't even, like, know that much about K9s. Like, it doesn't actually mean anything to me. Like, some of these cards, I feel like I haven't had much exposure. And I was going to regionals even. Like, even right. For me, like, I feel like I didn't see them as things I liked or disliked. They were just cards. Like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but...
Is it, you know, I don't feel like we are as close.
Yeah, to that's the what it cards is. We're as close to them. Be. And you might say, well, that's just like that's a you guys problem, right? Like that's just, you know, we have. But the thing is, like, I actually have still been like I said, I've been going to the events, and I still play a lot of Master Duel and everything. I just feel that like the cards, it feels so it's gotten almost so routine now, like just that like these will come, these will go. And that brings you to my next point about this ban list. As effective as I think this list is, like I think it hit a lot of things people wanted hit. Herald, Featherstorm, another barrier statue, finally like getting Malice out of the picture, consistency of Draco Tail, consistency of K9, whatever. It was very effective, like
almost too
effective. Machine-like effectiveness. But in addition to not really having any spicy sauce to get a casual person excited, it's also just kind of like telling you, listen... All right, 2025 is over. Anything that you new bought year, or played.
New format.
Yeah, new year, like new you. Malice, that shit came out the end of 2024. It had to go. And they'd already gotten rid of Rizeal. Mitsu came out pretty early in the year. That's gone too. And even the Justice Hunters decks, they're taking their hits. And it's like, they're just really telling you, okay, like, time to sell the new decks. I know that's always been a criticism of ban lists, right? Like, people... You know, don't love that, like, it feels like the ban list is just here to, like, sell this game and, you know, keep the sludge flowing. But it actually, this really is, like, what that feels like here. It's just keep the sludge flowing through the pipes. Buy Burst Protocol and play something new, bitch.
Which I will, so I guess I am the bitch here.
Yeah. Oh, are you going to be buying some Burst Protocol?
Gonna
be
playing something? Yeah, man. Burst Protocol actually has a lot of interesting cards in it. And I know there's been a lot of Reddit discords around, like, the new TCG or World Premier Archetype GMX, but I still kind of want to pick that up. I want to pick up the Archfiends. There was something else in Burst Protocol that is slipping my mind, but I like the set.
Yeah, Burst Protocol looks exciting. I did see some of the GMX leaks. We won't show them on screen. In fact, they don't even exist. I don't know what you're... If there were
leaks, I saw of them, Reddit posts about something.
If there were leaks of them, and I don't know or can't confirm or deny there were, they look cool. I don't know. They're fine. I think that not every TCG exclusive archetype is supposed to be amazing and broken and good, and they might turn out to still be that. You know what I mean? Like, Mitsurugi looked kind of like middling at release and then later got quite strong. So, yeah, what else was I going to say about Burst Protocol?
We get the new Draco Tail in here.
There's a new Draco Tail. I'm excited about it because I get Rescue Ace cards. I get Exo Sister cards. I'm going to try. I've decided that in an effort to try to build new decks and like learn some new things, I want to build Radiant Typhoon because I get some new cards in Burst Protocol.
Meta Sheep.
I mean, it's not.
Oh, I mean, in Genesis
it's more. Yeah, in Genesis it's more.
Yeah, we're getting new BES cards.
There are, yeah. The Konami boss kind of thing.
Gradius-related things.
I thought I would be doing something with Dark Lords. Because Dark Lords get a lot of cards in there.
Oh, yeah, we do get new Dark Lords here.
I'd wanted to build Doom Z, but it just never really, like... I feel like it's just not very good. But I might still try it.
I don't like Doom Z. They don't look cool to me.
Or Dooms, or whatever the hell it is.
Oh, we're getting new Tri-Brigade. That's right, we're getting new Tri-Brigade. I'm excited for that. I still have all my Tri-Brigades. They're just waiting.
Yeah. So here's another little tidbit, not too.
Tri-Brigade, but Spriggans.
Well, there are new Tri-Brigades, I think.
Yeah. Tri-Brigade Spriggans kit is also a Spriggans card, but I kept referring to it as a Tri-Brigade card.
Okay, so a few other little small Yu-Gi-Oh! Tidbits. The Spirit Charmers deck is actually now available. If you are interested in buying the Spirit Charmers Chronicles deck, it comes out this week.
When's the next episode?
That's a great question. That might be this week. That might be tomorrow.
I will let that decide if I get
there. Yeah, that's probably tomorrow now that I think about it. I'd been so checked out. Like, I didn't even really... I know we talked about, like, episode one. I didn't care that much for it, but I think that's just because I'm not that...
I need...
interested in the Charmers.
I need this Chronicle series to really earn its place because the branded one was so good.
Yeah, this just isn't that. Like, it is a...
I don't want to call it boring, because we're only on one episode.
Well, so. It's a genre. It's kind of cute girls doing cute things, slice of life in a fantasy setting type of anime. And, like, that is for a certain person. I'm probably not as much that person. Hate to say. Speaking of Burst Protocol, Konami, on the 22nd, which is the day that this podcast goes up, they're going to be doing a live stream where they show off some of the new cards and mechanics, so you can tune into that. It'll be after this podcast goes up, and like see some of the new stuff they're going to show. I'm sure Billy and Jerome will have plenty of things to say. I think that's all the Yu-Gi-Oh! Though. There hasn't actually been like a load of Yu-Gi-Oh! News.
I mean, at least there was a big Yu-Gi-Oh! Thing, so that does help. That does help. But that is not all of our card game stuff.
Yeah, and before we do, I was going to say I did get a Yu-Gi-Oh! Thing. I finally got this
big keycap.
Yeah, this big Yu-Gi-Oh! Blue Eyes White Dragon diorama lamp from Forge Panda. Hopefully you guys can see that. It actually, you can change the color of the LED lights on this thing, but it's like blue eyes surrounded by electricity and like waves and winds. And
it's actually really well done. There's like lots of detail inside this resin lamp.
Yeah, it's very detailed. I love it. Shout outs to Forge Panda. If I remember, I'll include information in the description because I think it looks great. I'm putting it on a shelf currently, but I'm trying to kind of decide what I want to do. It does come with this really small Millennium. It's a really tiny, hard to hold thing. This Millennium puzzle key that you can tap to the corner of it. And I don't know if I did that right. You tap it to the corner and it turns it off. And then you tap it again and it turns it on. So,
kind of a gimmick.
Odd use for that, but it might be on the price you're in because I remember their keycaps were like 50, 60 bucks each.
But they had a different name with the keycaps.
Yeah, so. Okay. Other card game news? Anything going on? What's happening?
So, there was some major Pokemon thievery at play.
Oh, do you have the story? That story?
I have that story.
Okay.
So, there was a $100,000 Pokemon store heist. I should say armed robbery.
Yeah.
It happened in New York. I want to say it was on Wednesday of last week in Manhattan. So it says, armed robbers steal at least $110,000 worth of Pokemon cards. Three men stole at least $110,000 worth of Pokemon cards from a shop in Lower Manhattan on Wednesday. The thieves held customers at gunpoint, smashed display cases, and took money from the cash register. One of the items stolen was a first edition Charizard card worth about $15,000, according to the store owner. In one of New York's destination shopping areas, where each block is lined with the yada 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 yada, three men burst into the shop, Poke Court, a new addition to West 13th Street in Lower Manhattan, around 6:45 p.m. So the day was not over yet, and stole at least $110,000. Now, no one was hurt, but security footage shows that two men approached the display case, smash it with a hammer before stuffing handfuls of Pokemon cards and packs into their backpacks.
I saw the video
I had the video as well.
Oh my God, let me turn it
on. Oh, you have it too?
Yeah. I just saw this news story where, yeah, like you can see the video footage of the heist. This looks terrifying, actually. Yeah, you can see the people and like they are, oh my gosh.
You can see them just walk across the aisle, smashing cases, just grabbing things brazenly. Because this is 6:45. It's during the day. They do not care. They are here for shiny cardboard and they're not leaving without it.
Yeah, I mean, also imagine being in the card shop at the time.
Of which there was probably plenty of people at 6:45 p.m.
Yeah, there are probably people playing cards. Like, if you were, you know, if you were in that card shop at the time when people come in, like, you know, smashing stuff, they've got guns, they held people at gunpoint. I see this video of this guy aiming the gun, like, walking towards what looks like maybe this is a card shop owner, somebody working there at the time. Actually terrifying, like, because, you know, imagine what that does for the sense of safety of customers. Like, you would just never, you might not ever want to go back to a card shop.
I mean, it's a hotbed for crime now. I mean, this was an organized operation. The men entered, one pulled out a gun and pointed at customers and workers, and then another man closed the curtain and blocked the entrance to stop people from leaving.
Oh, I see. This video gets more frustrating the more I watch it, because I'm seeing all these different, like, little things. This guy is, like, pointing a gun at a bunch of people who are, like, crowded around a table playing, maybe looks like a game of Commander or something. So, just, like, how did we get here? I mean, I know, like, I ask this all the time, but it's like,
look, I don't want to say it's Logan Paul's fault, but it's kind of Logan Paul's fault.
It is that, like, you know, just the hype beast card game kind of hobby tourist type, where they kind of go from hobby to hobby. We've seen it in sneakers. We've seen it in, you know, Pokemon. We've seen they've been going for One Piece as of late. Like, Legos and other, like, little collectibles things have experienced it to varying degrees of scalping and stuff like that. I think that it's strange that people have gotten to a point in, like, okay, here's my general theory on this, is that the economy right now sucks. It does. Life right now kind of sucks. It's tough to keep gas in your car. And it doesn't think...
When I put gas in my car, it tends to stay in there. But sometimes it leaves faster than I expect.
Yeah, and it's expensive to get it back in there, I should say. But, you know, like, groceries are high. And it also feels like we're at a period of time where, like, upwards economic mobility feels like it's at an all-time low. Like, you know, just your ability to, like, meaningfully pull yourself out of poverty is, the prospects aren't great.
I just coast in poverty. I just be coasting.
So I think that people kind of choose to deal with that in different ways. There are some people, like, because I've seen stories where, like, people are talking about how, like, you know, Gen Z and millennials and stuff are actually just choosing to simply, like, I'm, like, you know, you'll see more and more people who are, like, living, like, just that.
Move back in with your parents.
Yeah, moving back in with their parents, or just, like, having roommates, or even, like, getting married for tax benefits. You don't even, like this person, but you just get married because, like, we can both get some tax benefits, and it's, like, cheaper to live together. More and more people have, like, roommates and stuff like that.
That's, I got a Craigslist ad up right now. It's a 3 looking for a 2.
Okay.
For tax benefits.
Yeah, that's right. No, but, you know, like, some people, like, their lifestyle changes are beginning to happen for that. But also I think that on the maybe darker side of it, we are seeing more people who are choosing to, you know, look to, like, crime, look to hustles, look to, like, betting and gambling. That's a really big one.
You know, I'm glad that the sports betting scene has not hit card games yet.
I think it has, actually. Well, I think a lot...
You would think that would have come up as one of our stories by now.
Well, because I don't think it's, like, anything direct yet. But, like, they kind of feel like they're the same crowd as, like, the Pokemon scalpers. Because when you look at the Pokemon scalpers, like, the screenshots of, like, people in these, like, Discord groups and stuff, or people trying to sell things on Facebook, it's effectively a speculative market, right?
Sure.
Like, it's speculative investing. It's people kind of looking to, like, buy low, sell high, bet on their chances that, like, the value of this card will go up and then I'll find someone willing to buy it, and that, like, that's a whole thing. So I feel like it's there is some crossover there. And I think that in a world where, like, people are hoping that their parlays hit and that's their ticket out of poverty, you know,
we'll make it out the hood with this one.
Yeah, it almost sort of feels like, you know, just scamming people out of Pokemon cards and even going as far as, like, just stealing Pokemon cards and card game products becomes more attractive, I guess, to people. Like, because people are just, they're desperate, and this is an easier come up, perhaps, than...
Working.
Than working, obviously. But even then, I think, like, even compared to maybe, like, robbing a bank, this is an easier bet for these people. Because, like, banks have way more security, and, like, you're probably a lot closer to downtown or something where, you know, actual police might be. But like a card, but card shops don't. We talked about this, I think, maybe last week or week before. Like, card shops aren't going to have as much security.
No.
They're not going to have as much.
Usually can't afford it.
Yeah, they probably can't necessarily afford it. Like, they might have, you know, cameras and that's sort of it. And they're not going to have as much protection over their product. And, like, I'm not going to victim blame and say, like, oh, it's the card shop's fault. They should have had more, like, all these things.
They should have had armed guards like a nightclub.
They should have had, like, armed guards and, like, steel beams and all these things. You know, no. It's... These people shouldn't be, like, marching in here with guns and putting, like, innocent people trying to enjoy their card games at gunpoint. It's just that I think that, like, that's what it feels like this economy, I suppose, has driven people to do, is rely on, like, taking hustle culture this far. That's my spiel on it. What do you think?
Now I'm imagining, because, like, you know, I've been to a few nightclubs and they have armed security. And now I'm just imagining those security guards, like, walking up and down our local shop.
I know.
Just like full on Call of Duty rigs on their chest and back. And it's like, there's a guy walking around with a grenade to make sure your Yu-Gi-Oh cards don't get stolen.
I mean, like, it does suck that, you know, like when I think like why people go to card shops, you know,
it's, you go to a card shop for like escapism.
Yeah, just to relax, like, after a day of work.
It's like, supposed to be like a small hovel where reality doesn't exist and all that matters are your hobbies and like the people you enjoy them with.
It's a safe social third space.
It's not supposed to be a criminal hotbed. I mean, sure, many criminals have come through card shops, but they're card game players. It's different. Like, usually people aren't trying to rob card shops and card game players.
Yeah, you know, like, I would like...
But, you know, it's Logan Paul's fault.
Yeah. I hate to say it, but I do think that there is a crowd of people who just... They seem like they will follow, like, anything that he and that crowd says. Like, that sort of seems like what it is. I mean, you know.
He said you can make millions selling and selling collectibles, and, well... There's card shops everywhere that have collectibles.
Yeah.
Even though all we want to do is collect and play our cards in peace, we just can't seem to do that. But, you know, I will say this, you know, at least, you know, they say the robbery happened in, like, just under 3 minutes. A really efficient job. Like, if this were, like, Grand Theft Auto, then, like, that was a pretty good heist. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, you get a good ranking for it.
Like, you get a good ranking for it. I'm not happy about it, just to be clear. It's just, at least, at least they had masks on, and they at least did a proper robbery.
Right. That's right. You know, we're kidding, obviously.
Take the little wins.
So, okay. Do we have any other card game stuff?
That's all I had.
Okay, so here's something interesting. GameStop said that it shut down an infinite money glitch.
What? There was an infinite money glitch?
Somebody found out about an infinite money glitch.
Like a cheat code? Like they had action replay and they plugged it into the GameStop?
Effectively so, yes. So here's what happened. GameStop has said it had shut down a loophole that let its customers rack up store credit by continually trading in and then rebuying a Nintendo Switch 2 console. So the way that it worked was you apparently purchased a Nintendo Switch 2 for $414.99, and then you immediately trade it back in along with the purchase of a pre-owned game, and a promotional bonus was triggered that increased the Switch 2 trade credit to $472.50. And this was found, or at least popularized, by YouTuber RJC Media, and you could repeat this over and over, potentially earning more than $50 in store credit profit over time. So RJC Media, he claims to have earned hundreds of dollars using the, quote, glitch.
There is that asterisk there.
There's a couple,
because you have to trade it in with the purchase of a pre-owned game, so you're not getting like the full profit there.
It sounds like basically, I mean, so I guess you could find any cheap pre-owned game. Like, it sounds like anyone will do. So you could find like one that's like $3.99, I don't know, or something. Still though, I guess to trigger the glitch, you'd still have to like buy a Switch 2. So you got to have like $400 like lying around.
Was this a physical thing? Like,
you go into the store and you buy a physical Switch 2 and you buy.
So somebody was at the counter letting a guy buy Switch 2s, immediately return them.
That's another thing I was going to say too, is like, are the employees like letting you even, would they have let you? I guess they let this guy do it.
Like, how, because see, that's just negligent, right?
Yeah, it is.
Because there's no reason to let that continue. That you would have to really not care about your job or the company to let someone sit there and like buy return, buy return, buy return, buy return.
Yeah.
Does it say how many times they were able to do it?
He doesn't say exactly, but he says he made hundreds of dollars. So that suggests at least he did it like 4 or 5 times, potentially maybe 10, 12. I don't know. I'll say this too. You only got store credit, so it wasn't really like infinite money in the truest sense. Like you weren't getting cash. Yeah,
they weren't putting dollars in your pocket. I mean, GameStop would never do that.
Yeah, I'd say like GameStop's kind of known for their not great trade values. I think it's kind of a cute, fun story. It sounds like it only lasted a few hours, though. Like, that's what they told people. It just didn't even last a day, so.
I want to know what happened to the employee that let it happen.
Oh, they're gone. I'm 100% sure they're fired. They are out of there.
It's just so negligent. It's like, someone's done it 52 times. It's like, Kyle, at no point did you think to stop ringing him up?
It sounds like, since this was, like, on a YouTube video, they say, like, there's no suggestion that this was being widely used. So even though he found this exploit, I don't think anybody else was really getting to like exploit it. Or maybe a few people were, if they also
found just use it for content.
Still though, I do think it's kind of fun when you see these stories. I remember in high school, I think I was in high school. There was like I think a big thing with like Best Buy maybe, like where they'd accidentally listed things at like, you know, like these heavily like they left out like 2 zeros in the prices of things.
Oh my God.
Like a zero or two. It's like you were like, they're like TVs for like $5 or something instead of 500 or whatever. And I remember a bunch of people were getting those. And like, I think there's just like a whole news story about like Best Buy was like canceling orders and not honoring things. I think like Apple has had similar instances where like prices are incorrectly listed and they won't honor it. They will literally like charge your card back or whatever, like they'll do or whatever, however they handle it. But yeah,
because what I think it was, I think it was Walmart where it's like they would honor a mispriced like product no matter how egregiously it was mislabeled, to the point when people started trying to change the prices themselves. It's like, this TV said it was only $25, sir. No, it did not. It's like, no, it did say that. Look, it's right here. You scratched off half the price tag. So if we go to the security cameras, am I going to see you scratching out the price on this TV?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll just pay full price.
Was it last year that Chase Bank thing? Do you remember that?
Oh, Jesus.
Where that people could like withdraw a bunch of money or something?
Yeah, a bunch of people went in debt behind it.
Yeah, I think people got sent to prison.
Because...
like, I think there are people who went to jail over that.
For context, guys, there was this bank glitch that I think it was Chase, right?
I believe it was Chase Bank. Yeah.
It was a bank glitch with Chase where you were able to withdraw more money than you actually had in your bank account.
Yeah.
There were some, like, specifics to it, but that was, like, the long and short of it was you could withdraw more than you had. And for some reason, people thought... there's no downside to this.
Yeah, people abused it, and I think like Chase caught up with those people, and
oh, they put some negative signs in people's bank accounts.
I think people went like bank accounts went negative. People went to jail. I thought this would be a fun time to follow up. Actually, on it's actually mentioned in the GameStop story that we were on some employees' experiences with that Trade Anything Day they did last month.
Oh yeah, oh those stories were fun.
Here's a quote. I don't care if I get let go at this point. GameStop staff revealed the dark side of Trade Anything Day as customers harassed employees and deliberately brought in banned items.
Oh, God.
They full-on slapped it on the table. That's a quote.
No, slapped what?
On the table? Let's find out. A day after... This is from December 9th. So, you know, back when... I think they did the Trade Anything Day was like December 6th of last year. So a day after GameStop celebrated its Trade Anything Day event, the retailer's staff have shared their experiences of handling everything customers brought in, including numerous items deliberately designed to shock or gross out employees at the cash register. Oh, which exciting. We said this. We said, like, someone's going to bring it in some fucking, like, a feces in a box or something, you know, like...
This is my 42-inch dildo.
I actually would not be surprised if that was brought in. So it turns out the list of items that GameStop couldn't accept was even weirder, and the staff have recounted how they had to deal with customers looking to cause trouble or go viral on social media.
That is the biggest motivator in today's youth.
One such interaction sees a female employee get told they have something big for her before the customer hands over a small portrait with the words, "I love Epstein" on it, complete with a photo of President Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein together.
Wow.
"I want at least $5 million, the customer states, as the employee responds that she's unsure what to do with it. Another example sees a customer bring in a Sonic the Hedgehog plushie, which a GameStop employee then begins the trade-in process for. "It's hard to give up. I use him every night," the customer states. It's eventually revealed that the Sonic plushie has a fleshlight inserted in its bottom.
Guys, that was the sound of me dropping my tablet. Because that was just so stupid.
Yeah, and there's actually a TikTok video like showing that. So
of him using it?
Well, no, not I guess using it. Oh. But, and like you joked about, another GameStop employee wrote, "Had someone come to the store and they full-on slapped it on the table. We're recalling an incident where a man had brought in a dildo."
Of course they did. Of course they did. They probably brought it straight from a WNBA game.
Yeah, the man was told to leave, though the incident escalated to the point where the employees said they were now worried they were in trouble with their regional manager.
Oh, my God.
Which, that's kind of interesting. It, you know, it sounds like this is exactly what you'd expect. Just people bringing in the worst. Like, weird fetish objects, toys, whatever, and, like...
It went the direction we honestly expected at this point.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of a fun little follow-up to the, you know, speaking of GameStop. I also heard they've been, like, closing a bunch of stores this year.
Well, that should come as no surprise.
They closed over 400 locations.
It would be weird if we went a year without GameStop closing locations, you know, given their financial situation being not at all good.
Yeah, it's not great. You can tell GameStop, so they're trying everything to...
But they've lasted longer than I expected. Because, I mean, yeah. We've been talking about GameStop's decreasing revenue since
started this podcast at least
2014, 2013. Like, GameStop's been a good place for a long time.
That's the one thing I'll always give GameStop. Like, you know, love them or hate them, they have managed to, through hell and high water,
they will survive.
Stay around. Like, I remember when GameStop first started trading in, like, you could trade in smartphones and like stuff like that. I remember that was in 2012, maybe, I don't know. So like they first started taking like smartphones and tablets. Obviously we know they did the the pop figure kind of Funko Pops and just other merch junk era that they've been in.
I wonder how many Funko Pops line like the world's landfills.
So
it's got to be an abhorrent number of them. Are they recyclable? God, I hope they are.
Probably not. I don't know. Are they resin, PVC? I don't know what they are.
I don't know what they're made out of.
But, yeah, and then now, GameStop's kind of big in its card game. Sort of, you know, they've got the mystery packs where you can maybe get a PSA.
These cards are recyclable. Thing, right? So.
Yeah. I know there was, a GameStop back in, my hometown that closed recently, so... It was kind of GameStop, I guess they're not having a great go of it.
Not even close.
Yeah, so infinite money glitch. I wonder if anybody else got some cash.
Yeah, anybody y'all made money off GameStop?
Okay.
It sounds like an oxymoron.
So, yeah, that doesn't happen at GameStop. They're not giving you anything. Okay, well, here's something cool. Do you have another story?
No.
Okay, great. So listen to this. I found this kind of an amusing one. Microsoft CEO warns that we must do something useful with AI or they'll lose social permission to burn electricity on it.
I didn't know they had social permission to begin with.
Yeah, that's true. So in a conversation at this year's Rich Person Convention, a.k.a. the World Economic Forum, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella warned that AI will lose public support because it had so much of it. Unless it's used to do something useful that changes the outcomes of people and communities and countries and industries. He says, we'll quickly lose the social permission to take something like energy, which is a scarce resource, and use it to generate these tokens. If those tokens are not improving health outcomes, education outcomes, public sector efficiency, private sector competitiveness, across all sectors, small and large, right? And that, to me, is ultimately the goal. What do you think about that? I guess sounds like he is being, just at the surface level, without me reading too much more into this, like he is sort of trying to take on a certain degree of, I guess,
responsibility.
Corporate responsibility. Like, you know, we have this AI thing, but we have got to do good with it, do right by the people with it, lest we lose their approval.
I felt like it was an acknowledgement that up to now, AI has not done anything useful.
I think you're right.
We're spending a lot of like resources and time on a technology that so far has not proven itself to be actually useful on a macro scale. Since it wants to use macro resources, it needs to affect us in the same manner, but it just doesn't.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think. I know, like, Microsoft, they've got, like, a deal with OpenAI. I know they have a deal with OpenAI. I know they have a, like, they do Copilot, right?
Yeah, they have Copilot. I don't know what powers Copilot.
It's ChatGPT, maybe it's something else. I don't use Copilot. I disable that stuff whenever I can.
I mean, I've used Copilot just to, like, ask it questions on how to use the Microsoft suite, because that's okay. The only thing I trust it to do. Yeah. How do I use the things that you do?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, I guess it's nice to hear him say this. It's like, so what's the plan to actually make this stuff useful? That's my main question. It's like, I still to this day, like, you know, we were talking last week about Grok taking people's clothes off and like, whatever. It's like, so like, what are we, like, what's the AI supposed to do for me that I'm willing to pay for anyway? Like, because right now, like, you can talk to Copilot, you can talk to Gemini, or talk to... Is there something that AI can do for you right now, Alec, that, like, you're willing to give it, you know, $20 a month or something for?
No.
Like, yeah, like, is there anything it could do that you would be willing to...
If you could clear up my cough...
It literally fix you. I literally
off the top of my head, I'm like, I've been coughing a lot.
ChatGPT, please clear up my sinuses. I mean,
if it could just do something that made a tangible impact on my quality of life, it has not done that yet. But you know, until then, we'll just dry up some more dams and like starve some more children, I guess.
One interesting example that he gives is around the healthcare industry. He says, like, he did provide at least one real example of what he means by all this. When a doctor can spend more time with the patient because the AI is doing the transcription and entering the records in the EMR system, entering the right billing codes so that the healthcare industry is better served across the payer, the provider, and the patient, ultimately, that's an outcome that I think all of us can benefit from. So,
that sounds like a lawsuit waiting to happen. That's multiple ways. That's multiple spots for an AI to make a mistake and cost someone their life.
I don't. Would you trust the idea? Yeah, I know. I mean, I know the answer to this. Oh, like, just the idea of, I guess, you're talking to your doctor, and the AI is, I guess, like listening in and it's taking notes on like what you're saying. I feel like there's a number of reasons why I actually don't trust that. It's not just for the obvious ones.
You
either.
Would be doomed. That AI would mess up your allergies or some shit, and prescribe you some fucking venom.
You know what I think was actually what I thought of is like it would just mischaracterize the visit to be something that's like more expensive for you, right? Because if it's like listening to you, like me sort of describing to my doctor this like pain I'm feeling or whatever the symptoms, and like it just sort of exaggerates them, or it will recommend the most expensive medication, like, because it's going to be coded, I would assume, in the best interest of, like, you know, the pharmaceutical industry or something. Like, can I prescribe with this AI? The AI says you need to be prescribed this most expensive thing. It's like several thousand dollars, you know,
like, how come it only recommends medications that's not covered by my insurance? Oh, because the AI doesn't acknowledge brokies.
I also think that, like, transcription tools are, in general, like, I guess AI can do that, but I also don't even consider that to be, like, AI. I feel like that's just, like, you can, there's been, like, kind of automatic transcription for a while.
Still not very good.
I guess they're assuming that's, like, it's transcribing meetings and stuff, and then also going on to summarize those meetings. Which, yeah. I guess there's, like, use there.
There are people who do that for a living, and they will do it damn near perfectly, and I would trust them. and be willing to pay more so that they could do that job, and I could trust they do that job more so than some random AI that will get it wrong, and then get angry and confused because there's no one to blame because the stupid AI did a stupid AI thing.
Yeah, I'm just not really sure that I like see the applications yet. I still don't feel like I've yet to see something that's like worth paying for. Now, as a business, I think they've managed to convince a lot of these businesses to maybe try to invest in AI and like to varying success or whatever. But like, yeah, I'm not really sure. I don't know what I would pay AI to do. Like, because I don't trust that it would do a good enough job is my thing. Because like even with AI art, like if it's going to turn me into a Studio Ghibli thing or whatever, people can sniff that out a mile away. Like the moment somebody sees like some thumb, like if I use that on a YouTube thumbnail, people are going to be like, Paul, you fucking generate this with AI. Like we can tell, like it has a look where everybody can tell. So like it's not like it can really like generate an image that I can use in like a business sense. I saw recently a billboard that had an AI generated, it was like a dentist maybe, it had like some AI generated like that Ghibli style on a billboard.
Yeah,
I saw this a couple of months ago. And I looked and I was just like, you should like, ew, that's like, why? Take that down. And it's not even up there anymore for what it's worth. I saw this a couple of months ago and then at that same place like a few weeks ago, it is not there anymore. So
good.
I think they were forced to take it down or whatever, but like, yeah, I don't know what I would like pay what I think AI does right now well enough that I would be willing to pay it.
I don't think it does anything right now. That can all change in the future. I just don't know how many more things we have to lose for the development of AI before it either becomes useful or we decide this was stupid and let's get back to letting humans do human things.
Yeah, one interesting thing too that I actually, an interesting point that somebody kind of raised about like the use of AI was how like even at its best, it's only in like these really small dose type things where it's like kind of integrated into an existing app. So like you still wouldn't really be paying for that in most cases. Like maybe it can help to...
It can be a feature.
It can be like a little feature in like a Messenger app or something. Like maybe that's sort
it's
of
like
what they wanted to do.
I take a picture and I can edit Paul out of them.
Yeah, that's right. Or change me, or put me into a bikini. That's what Grok will let you do it.
Grok, make Paul sexy.
Yeah, well, that's insulting. That suggests that I'm not already.
Oh, my bad.
No, I don't know. I don't. There's nothing with AI that I can really think of that I want. So, yeah, but that's what he's got to say. So, here's this last interesting story, unless you have anything else.
Nah.
This was one that I saw like last year, and I remember I threw it into here, and I never talked about it. So, Alec is barely making it through this podcast. Okay. Mr. Beast's former manager says that the age of social media superstars is fading for a specific reason, and that's a specific definition. But when you hear that, what do you think that means?
That... like internet celebrities are not celebrating anymore.
Yeah, well, so Reed Deutscher, Mr. Beast's former manager, says we won't see another Mr. Beast scale creator soon. And he says that as social algorithms focus on individual interests, it's harder for creators to achieve a broad reach. Influencers who stick to a niche are well-positioned to sell products to fans, even if they're less famous. So the synopsis of this article that comes to us from Business Insider is basically that we have kind of passed the age where you will find an influencer who appeals to everybody. And that's because rarely will everybody be able to see said influencer. And that's because of, like, the way that algorithms work.
That is true.
You think about how tightly our algorithms learn us and then silo us off. There's a very real chance that there's celebrities, singers, musicians, like actors, whatever, YouTubers that you'll just never hear about because they literally will never pass your vision.
That's a little disturbing when you think about it because, you know, so much of culture is shared experience, but algorithms are trying to silo your experiences.
That's true. When you think about like your algorithm, there's probably things that you like see a lot of, and then just things that you just literally don't see anything of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, now I'm in a better spot than most people. I've kicked a lot of my social media to the curb, where at least the stuff that really tries to, you know, shave down who you are as a person. But yeah. I mean, I remember when at my height with Twitter, now X, it could really, the more time you spent on that stupid platform, the more like misconstrued your like way of thinking is, or what's happening in life.
It got
becomes
bad.
So predicated by your interests. The only things you know of what's happening around you is your favorite video games, TV shows, like actors,
yeah, and opinions.
You wouldn't know about anything else.
It very much can be like walking through a hall of mirrors at times. Like, I think, you know, it's funny, you know, like, you and I, at this point, I know neither of us have, like, personal Twitters anymore, correct?
Nope.
I don't think, yeah, I don't have a personal, I have an APS Twitter. And I, even there, like, you know, I've kind of curated to be like, okay, this is just, like, this APS work Twitter account, so I'm just going to simply have people in our circle of, like, this is, like, people I'd want to collab with or whatever. So that's generally fine. But when I think back to how Twitter could really, like, you know, just if you like certain things, you will see those things and you'll see nothing else. And you'll hear people who like have these points of view that are oftentimes, I guess, like identical to what yours are because it's based on what you've liked.
Mm-hmm.
And it can really convince you that the world sees things this way and the world operates this way. And, you know, extrapolating that out further to like things like politics and like just general culture, I think that's where we kind of ended up in like the culture war that we're in right now, where like people just have these fundamental disagreements about like what they believe, like literally, like, I mean, like the foundations of how things work are in question or in doubt.
I think the big because I noticed this disconnect about 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, because you know sometimes I go outside and I talk to people, and I realize that In a lot of cases, I've stopped talking to people. I've stopped communicating with people. And instead, I've started this weird exchange of algorithms.
Oh, interesting.
Where I was talking to a friend, and it felt like 90% of what they wanted to speak about were like these hyper-niche things from their TikTok algorithm.
Right.
And then I would try to speak about the things in my algorithm. And instead of really communicating back and forth with one another, we just kind of kept trading like bits and pieces of our own social media experiences at each other. And ever since, I've noticed that more and more, the more someone's online, the less, of a like broad perspective they have on the world. And they really only know what's within their algorithms. And as far as they're concerned, certain world events have not happened. But certain like things within their algorithm, like it's like, you know, if you're in like Game of Thrones talk right now, 80% of your thought, 80% of your algorithm's probably about that new Game of Thrones spinoff show. And I have a coworker who today kind of only spoke about that all day. And it's like, my guy, I didn't know there was a new Game of Thrones spinoff.
Something that I've always thought about is just that I've noticed that there's like a lack of shared cultural like experience in like, you know, like nowadays when movies come out or even before they come out, there's like a lot of fuss around like the casting or who's directing it and like what that means.
See, I feel like nowadays you don't even hear about movies.
Yeah, well, so I'm getting there.
Oh, okay.
There's not, what I feel is missing right now is like, I don't know that, like, you know, when we were growing up, there were these movies like Harry Potter, The Hunger Games, like certain sort of like these shared, like all teens watch these sort of just teen fantasy drama movies, like
right,
Twilight and stuff. Everybody just kind of
actually
like,
didn't watch that.
Everybody like knew about them.
I didn't know, even if you didn't
watch it, you knew about it. You'd heard about it. You had an opinion on it. And I feel like sometimes I think like less. I see more instances of like truly just not knowing what's happening on the other side of the fence, whatever that fence might be. Like whether that's in gaming, whether that's in movies, whether that's in music, it's like it sometimes feels like because of algorithms, there's just certain stuff that like people just straight up don't know about. Like straight up don't, like you just don't know, you haven't heard about it, and it's because it just didn't show up. And so like I get what this person is maybe saying about like the idea of an influencer who like can reach everybody and appeal to everybody feels unlikely because like literally the algorithm just like wouldn't let you.
I've noticed recently, and this is actually a very recent thing I noticed, was like hip hop, like rap music was falling out of like my few like algorithms that I have. And I noticed it happened because ASAP Rocky's album dropped and I missed it at first. And I was like, whoa, ASAP drop? How did I not hear about this? Like, and I thought about it, I was like, I guess I haven't recently searched his name. And so my algorithms just decided you're not an ASAP Rocky fan anymore. So we're not going to let you know he dropped an album.
What's interesting is that you could even be defined as like, if you don't engage enough with, it's kind of what happened to you. It's like, if you don't engage enough with the genre of thing that you like, you can effectively actually be trained to not like it anymore because you won't see it anymore. So imagine if like, you know, like in the example of like ASAP Rocky, it's like, okay, I guess you haven't engaged with him in some capacity enough for our algorithms to catch. So we're not going to ever show you any more of him. And because your phone is the only outlet into the world, as far, like enough months pass and he might as well not exist to you. Like, because you just won't have ever seen anything. And unless you're like, unless you have some other external source of information, which fewer and fewer of us like really do, then is you as good as just aren't an ASAP Rocky fan.
Yeah.
Anymore. Like, it could even go so far as to be like, you know, it could force you to not like a video game series. I say not like in air quotes because like you just forgot to engage with it. Yeah, and
that's as
now good you miss out on the news.
Not liking it, right?
Because that's another thing too, is like the algorithms, they move so fast now. Like nowadays, like if you like something on like any of these sites, it's so immediate how fast it like starts to flood your algorithm. I know on Instagram, like if I see an ad for something and I even like linger on it too long, or like accidentally click it, all the ads turn into basically that product. Yeah. or a similar one for the next like 2 weeks. And so it's like it's so fast to act on whatever, you know, inputs that you give it, that like if you're not careful, you can effectively lose touch with something that you did like because you just didn't engage with it soon enough. So I don't know. I find that like alarming because I think it worries me, I guess, just how much control it means that your phone or in these like little social media sites begin to have over you as a person with interests.
Like, I know it's a real thing that's happening because when I was younger, we heard about every single like hip hop music release. Even if it was an artist that you didn't necessarily follow, you knew about it because there wasn't a whole lot going on in life. Or at least you were going to be exposed by the latest music releases because of the radio, because of like cultural osmosis and because of discussions around you. But I feel like we don't talk as much with random people as we used to. We don't listen to broad general media as much. So things that are not currently within your algorithm are not going to be reintroduced to you anytime soon. And you can just miss things now in a way that's not how it used to be. And so I find it disturbing. I don't know.
This is so scary that you were telling me about this, because here's the thing. I think there was an interview. It was like Jennifer Lawrence, I believe.
J-Lo.
A clip of an interview with her. And the interviewer was like asking her, like, you know, what are your favorite like recent songs of the last year? And she's like, I actually don't know like what the popular music, like the new popular music is anymore, because like she was like, you know, basically because they got rid of, not like literally it doesn't, when they got rid of the radio, like I just don't know where I'm supposed to hear these anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, and people were, you know, commenting like, oh, you can still use the radio, it still exists now, but like, you know, like people don't, it just culturally is a lot less relevant.
I'm not
going
to tell my Uber driver to turn up the radio every time I take a ride.
And so she was, I thought it was like a really good point that she'd raise, which is just that like sometimes the algorithm can just make you not know about things.
My car has a radio, right?
It probably does.
I mean, for the love of God, I can't remember ever turning that thing on.
Yeah, I know. I think mine has a radio.
I'm pretty sure it has a radio. Like,
it's not. It has a console XM thing, right? Or Sirius XM. Sirius XM, is that what it is?
Yeah.
I know my car,
is that still a thing?
My car has that, or had it.
Okay, so you have a radio.
But I think you have to pay for that.
Oh well, yeah, Sirius XM like is a pay.
Subscribe.
I'm
not.
I don't know if Sirius XM is still a thing, but it was a pay for.
Like, I'm not going to pay for that. So it's like, is there a free radio still? I think there's still a free radio.
I would hope so.
I need to check that like tomorrow. It's just an interesting, like, scary thought, like that.
Well,
you're,
I turned on Android Auto on my car, and I never looked back.
Yeah, but then that means that like you're at the mercy of like your YouTube. You use YouTube Music, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like if you use Spotify or whatever, it's like you're kind of at the mercy of what YouTube Music chooses to let you know exists.
I mean, it has the tab to show me like new music, but it's new music that it thinks I'd be interested in.
Yeah,
it doesn't show me just all the new music.
Yeah, so.
And like, you know, I could be, you know, I could be like a polyglot when it comes to music. Maybe I want to hear some country. I don't, but you know, I should get the option.
Yeah, so I thought that was just an interesting thing. It's sort of an alarming thought that like, now, to be clear, to get back to the original story, I don't mind the idea of there not being like a super influencer. I'm not a Mr. Beast fan or anything, so whatever. But like, more so just the idea that like our algorithms manage to so effectively silo us that it's a little scary. Like, it can control what you just don't even hear about.
Like, what you even perceive as like,
it's like being real news.
Like, news, yeah.
Very like post-truth kind of world. Anyway, okay. So I have a couple of viewer questions for us to kick off the year. We didn't do them last week, so I thought that this would be sort of fun. There are two pretty good Yu-Gi-Oh! Questions, I think. Let me see if I can find them. Yeah. All right. I know it's late, but Happy New Year to you all. The recent Overframe retrained Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards show me that it's Konami's Break the Glass moment due to year 2026 having no new anime to promote new cards, and the bad economy means less people would spend money on buying new archetypes. The fact that all the retrains are very good for the anime archetypes means Konami is trying to squeeze more money from the old player base to satisfy their stockholders. Is there any other Break the Glass moments like this that you guys are aware of? The only one I know of is Square Enix remaking Final Fantasy VII because they know it guarantees to generate profits. I was gonna say like Harry Potter HBO, like if we're talking just like in media in general.
In media in general, okay.
We can do Yu-Gi-Oh and we can do both. In media in general, I think it's like everywhere. Like,
yeah, I mean, nostalgia is
toxic nostalgia. Like, literally, we are going to keep reheating the leftovers in the microwave until you can't eat them anymore.
I mean, shit, they was good when you first had them.
Yeah. Do you want to reheat them for the fourth time this week?
It tastes good the third time, too.
Okay. Well, that's Harry Potter HBO. Like, to me, like, it is a, you know, whatever you do or don't think of Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling, and all that stuff. I'm talking about, like, literally the fact that they are making this, like, live-action 10-year-long remake series, to me, is, it's a money grab. I mean, like, it is clearly, like, it is riskier to invest in something new. We will rehash this tried and true story. But there's so many examples of that, I feel. I mean, like,
of just like nostalgia pandering for a buck. That's just the name of the game now.
Yeah.
I mean, in Yu-Gi-Oh's case, I mean, they kind of need it.
I think that Yu-Gi-Oh! Is so behind the curve that they needed to do this. Like, overframe cards are really, like, 15 years, like, too late. Not in that, like, I think they're going to fail and, like, it's, like, literally too late. But, I mean, like, just other card games have been doing this for so long. And the fact that it took Yu-Gi-Oh! This long to do it, you know, that sucks.
And honestly, I feel like they haven't broken the glass yet. You know how why I think that?
What do you mean?
Because where's the Dark Magician girl?
I think that she's definitely going to be revealed sooner rather than later.
I mean, that's the one. Yeah. That's the one. She's going to break the internet.
I think, like, as far as, like, other things that Yu-Gi-Oh! Could do, I think that they are probably, I really do feel like there are probably talks to remaster that anime, DM. I think that it would, in, like, judging by just the way that most companies operate these days, Japanese mm-hmm. and Western, it is far more likely that if we are going to get a new Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime project, it is going to be a DM remake of some kind before it's a Yu-Gi-Oh! 9.
I'm honestly surprised they haven't announced the remake yet, just because, I mean, everybody and their mother's remaking their anime. I mean, we did...
we've seen everything.
We did Shaman King, Rurouni Kenshin.
One Piece. Like, there's always... That's my thing. Is like, I think that there's no way they're not at least in talks to just remake the Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime.
It's happening.
So, yeah, here's the next question. Someone says Pizza Hut China has a Gundam collab. You might want to look that up.
No, I've seen it.
Oh, okay. But anyways, so what would be something that makes pack opening more more fun? Or more specifically, what can make pack chaff desirable? Full arts are coming, giving the top of the set something chaseable, and Genesis is helping out the heart of the underdog archetypes. The players are still buying singles because packs are never cost effective. I've been looking at Pokemon and the feeling of, oh, I pulled my fave, seems like a nice incentive for their game. Would replacing the bottom of the set with draftable alt arts of low tier iconic monsters be attractive to you? That's actually an interesting idea. Monsters that are nostalgia bait or mascots but are not set sellers like Dark Magician, Blue Eyes, or Ray. So maybe an MST with Avion or I think it's an MST with Avion, a 2000 vanilla with the alt art of Celtic Guardian or Baby Dragon or Silver Fang, or a bottomless trap hole, I guess, with Laundry Dragon made. Or is there something that would work better for the Yu-Gi-Oh! Casual pack opener? I'm interested in hearing your ideas. Keep up the good work. Bye, Jason.
Woo!
I think do you think you understand the...
I mean, we're trying to make pack opening good again.
Okay.
That's the general idea here. And, I mean, that's tough. Like, because what card gamer likes to open packs still? It feels like the only people who like opening packs is Pokemon players.
It is interesting, you know. I think that there are two types of packs that people like to open. Maybe three. Correct me if I'm ignorant. I'm sure people will. I think people like opening Pokemon packs. That seems like that's just evident, clearly evident, self-evident. I think people like opening these new Magic the Gathering, like, Universes Beyonds. Those seem like those excite people to open, because whether it's the shiny cards or not, you are seeing an IP that you're familiar with converted into Magic, and that's just exciting.
I mean, those sets just have excitement written all over them.
So there's that. And I think that maybe the third is maybe they're like kids who like opening Lurkana, perhaps. That's just me going on a limb. I have no clue. Nothing to back that up. I do think that the average card game player, because of the demographic, because they are so, you know, it's just people in their 30s with kind of more people who are more cynical, jaded, you know, look out for number one at all costs. I think that's why, like, so many people just don't want to open much of anything. They would rather buy their singles. What do you think, though?
It's tough to figure out a way to smooth out the pack opening experience. Because, like, in the Bandai card sphere, you know, alt arts are, like, the name of the game. Like, every box usually has, like, two alt art hits, and you're just pulling in so you see those. if the overframes had like Bandai alt art pull rates, that'd be pretty good. But knowing Konami, the pull rates will be very low. I mean, they'll probably be one out of every couple boxes.
Yeah, I like this person's idea. I think that like it's literally better than nothing. Because
I mean, it's better than nothing for sure.
Because the way that this is now, like, packs suck. I really do think like most packs, and I don't think it's just a Yu-Gi-Oh problem. I think every game has this to varying degrees, but it's really bad in Yu-Gi-Oh. Packs are not draftable. Like, you cannot draft with new Yu-Gi-Oh boxes, really. And I think that the idea of, like, if your pack's going to have 9 cards anyway, and a lot of it's just trash, then why not make the bottom half, like, the bottom half of the pack just be designed to be drafted with?
Yeah, I mean,
because it's something that you can do with these cards that you couldn't otherwise do. And, like, and they are specifically designed to be drafted. They're just kind of more generic cards with more generic stat lines and, like, staple-y type of trap hole, MST, Book of Moon, just effects and some small type-based synergies and, like, attribute synergies as opposed to being part of an archetype. Why the hell not?
I mean, that's essentially what Magic does with their play boosters.
Yeah, because they combine those. They combine
them with the draft booster boxes. Now you can draft the same packs that you're trying to pull cards out of.
Yeah.
It's just, I think it's efficient. I don't know if Konami wants to dedicate the, like, I mean, it really should be less work on their part, honestly.
I think that it would be good, because, like, when you look at the top half of the pack, there's, like, secrets and stuff that you need for competitive play, secrets, ultras, whatever. But, like, yeah, if it's going to be garbage anyway, like, I'm using garbage as just, like, a catch-all term. Like, if this pack filler is going to probably just be bulk that you don't want to do anything with, at least giving it the possible application of, okay, guys, we have a bunch of boxes at the card shop. It's like a, you know, Wednesday afternoon. People are kind of hanging out. Sure, let's just draft. Because, like, now the packs become draftable. And I don't care if they're old cards or new cards. It doesn't matter to me.
Because, I mean, if they were going to get thrown away anyway.
Yeah, okay. If it can be drafted, I don't care if the theme is Celtic Guardian or Radiant Typhoon thing. Like, it doesn't, like, make them just be something that you can draft with. Because it comes down to, it is better than nothing.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, they could create, like, quote unquote, like, draft archetypes that way as well.
Yeah.
Where it's not even that, you know, it's a tight archetype of cards that work together, but it's more so these cards are kind of nonsense. They're kind of weak, but what if we just, like, draw and tell a consistent story through these draftable cards just to make them visually interesting?
You know what I think that's true? Like, I think that something that they could also start doing is, like, just make it more mascot-y. Like, maybe, like, start, like, kind of just
Pikachu.
Yeah, actually, like, lean in hard on a few mascot cards. Like, start making more stuff that's just, like, it's a common, it's not meant to be worth anything. It's just many different cute variations on, like, some cards. Like, you know, like, Magic was trying to do that thing with, like, loot or whatever?
Because that went over very well. I don't know how well
that went. But, I mean, imagine if, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Just leaned in on some of the cute cards and the Time Wizard, Karibo, kind of, like, the small, cute things. There could be something there. I don't know. Anywho. Okay, well, I guess that is it for this week's pod, y'all. It was fun.
That's a wrap.
Thank you all so much for joining us. We hope you're having a wonderful week. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Maybe tune into that Konami live stream.
Yeah, see what Burst Protocol is bursting about.
Yeah. And we'll see you guys next week. Same time, same place.
Pass turn.